Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. More news with Greg at 7 o'clock. You're tuning to the SAFM Market Update with Money Web. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at Tiger Brands' results. They provided us with an update on the financial year that ended 30 September 2025. We're going to reflect on those numbers with the Chief Financial Officer of that business. Then we've got a conversation with National Treasury on their latest proposal to potentially introduce a 20% gambling tax on online gambling revenues. We're going to take a look at that with National Treasury and get a sense of what is the rationale behind that and what happens next. We've also got a conversation with the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition on their latest proposal to Washington on trade relations between South Africa and the United States. We're going to see what we make of that information and where we go to from a trade perspective there. Then we've got a conversation with the team at Standard Bank taking a look at sustainable financing and sustainable solutions around energy. We're going to take a look at the latest project that they have financed and how it is that they're approaching these projects going forward. And then we're going to wrap up the show today with a small business conversation rather than an executive lounge conversation. And that's because we don't have a show tomorrow. So we're going to do our SME of the week a little early this week so that you still get the best of the small businesses that we find.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We're kicking off the show, as we always do, with a sense of market movements throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by Sasfin Wealth's David Shapiro to take a look at market movements and see what we make of them. Uncle David, happy Wednesday. Always lovely catching up with you. Markets having a good day today. The Rand having a good day. Equity markets, financial stocks. What happened?
Everything's looking good, and I think we're going to go like this into December. So I think we overcome last week. But Jimmy, you know, if you, what's really driven the markets, and certainly on our market, and it's quite odd. There's a front runner, Kevin Hassett, who's been an economic advisor to Trump. You know, who's the front runner now for the Fed for Fed governor. He's obviously, if he's a Trump appointee, he's going to be dovish, which means you can expect rates to start coming down, whether they'll come down now or not. So how does that translate? It does worry people. It worries investors that maybe if they lower rates too fast, you know, too fast, it's going to cause inflation. So what happens is rates start to rise in the United States. Well, you know, we're talking only a few points, but people start to get worried about inflation. That weakens the dollar, that helps the rand, that helps gold. So that's the kind of story we're getting. It's all about weak dollar, still concerns about inflation in the United States. But against that, the U.S. markets are strong. They like the fact that rates are going to come down. You know, we've also seen the bubble stories kind of vanishing. It's popped. Not the markets have popped, but I think the stories popped. And we're still seeing, you know, very good movements in tech stocks. So all markets around the world are going up. I think we're going to get rate cuts in the UK. It's heading that way. So Europe was strong. Yeah, listen, we're going into holiday season. You know, rejoice. Enjoy these markets.
I'm trying to, Uncle David, but I've got PTSD, and I think a lot of investors do as well. When I look at the Rand, I mean, at the moment, the Rand, 17 Rand, 10, 17, 11 against the US dollar, but it's gaining ground against the euro and the pound, which points to the fact that this is Rand strength and not necessarily dollar weakness alone. Where's the Rand strength coming from if the dollar's continuing to get stronger on its own side?
You know, I think I don't want to say that there's an emerging market boom and foreigners are coming in and buying our stocks. They're certainly buying gold shares and they're certainly buying platinum shares. But that's on a global market, I think. So, yes, there are buyers coming in there. We see nice volumes in there. But it's also our bond market. You know, there's if we're going to plug inflation at 3%, if the Reserve Bank are going to maintain a 3% inflation target, and our long bonds are over 9% or just under 9%. That's a 10-year. If you go a little further out, it's 9 or 10, up to 10%. So I think there's very attractive reasons to come into our bond market, and things are stable. We're not getting worse. I don't want to say we're doing brilliantly, but things are improving slowly. So it becomes an attractive area to put money in. And I think emerging market bonds are being looked at, quite seriously. And South Africa is a very liquid market. We're a proxy for emerging markets. So I think foreigners like to come in. If you say emerging markets, go for the rand. So we can see. I was at a presentation today where they said, you might see the rand at 14. I said, well, that suits me a lot, because I have to travel see my kids in Australia. I have to travel to America. At 14, it makes it a lot more affordable.
It certainly does. It makes for a much better traveling experience. Uncle David, can we take a look at financial stocks? You touched on the fact that bonds are doing well, and usually, at least for this year, financial sector stocks in South Africa have been that barometer of confidence in the South African market. Is that something that we are seeing in today's movements? And is it what you're alluding to, that potentially this could be what's kicking off the Christmas rally?
I think so. They are cheap if you look at them historically. So you've got very low multiples. In other words, they're not expensive. Very high dividend yields. So if you're looking for safety, banks provide that kind of haven. So and I also think that even on the retail stocks, even though we're not seeing, there's still complaints about the consumer under pressure. I know you're going to talk to Tiger Brands and they open up the commentary, how consumers are under pressure, but, really good results. But I think that can change. Jimmy, we're going into Black Friday tomorrow. Well, it's Black Thursday or it's the start of whatever. And I think it's going to be a very good gauge to see the health of the consumer and what appetite they have, to spend. I think it's going to be a very important indication for us. I'm sure it's all going to be in foodstuffs, which which is great. So, and globally, we'll be watching that as well. The U.S. is things are slowing down there. We know on the employment side and we know on the consumer confidence side. So it's also going to be a very good indication of how things are. But don't, this rand, the gold price is holding. It's more, there is a large element of dollar weakness, but the rand can hold, it can hold at these levels and even go better.
My PTSD, Uncle David, wants me to believe that there is another shoe that's going to drop. But all signs are pointing to a positive time. I mean, you touched on US markets doing well, Asian markets, European markets, South African markets. Yeah. Is this enough momentum, perhaps, to shrug off all of the conversations around the bubble, the pop, the recession and all of that? Is that enough momentum to take us into next year? Or is it more, let's celebrate the Christmas period and then we'll deal with January in January?
We'll deal with January in January. I think there is a confidence there. I think this whole bubble, the extension of valuations, I think is vastly exaggerated. And the results that we saw in the third quarter from US companies were very strong. And even if you go to the IT companies, there's no real talk. Yeah, Jimmy, we can make up stories, which the press and the media like to do, because they love to scare people so that you go and read their columns, and pass it on. But I don't see any of that stress in the market, and when we go through the numbers and we see what companies are saying about the outlook for the future. So, and certainly in AI, I think it's gathering momentum, more usage. The gauges that we're seeing, or the indications of how people are using it, are picking up quite incredibly. Yes, eventually the semiconductor companies will slow down. They can't keep growing at the pace that they have. But I think it will then spread to, all the other business and those who are applying it. And many, many companies are starting to apply AI. So we're in very early stages there. But people love to panic, and let them panic. They enjoy it. You know, they love a good, you know, they love a good skiing. And it's, you know, when you go to a dinner table, especially over the holiday season, now people love to stress. No one says, "Oh, things are great." Everything, you know, they always moan and groan. So
perhaps that's what's happening within the markets. The legendary David Shapiro has pronounced that Christmas is here. Markets are going to do well, and we should enjoy the festive period. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much, Uncle David, for the time and for the insights. Lovely having you on the show as always. Sasfin Wealth's David Shapiro joining us to take a look at markets and the positivity they are going through, and saying we should just ride it out.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The Department of Trade, Industry and Competition has presented to Parliament a revised proposal that will be sent through to Washington in an effort to see if we can repair trade relations with the United States. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. I'm joined on the line by the spokesperson for the Minister of the DTIC, that is Kamil Ali, to take a look at the latest proposal and see what we make of it. Kamil, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. Can we start with the trade relationship between South Africa and the United States has been, for lack of a better term, strained over the last couple of weeks and possibly months at this point. Where do we stand on that relationship now? How is that engagement taking place?
Well, to me, I think it's important to, from the outset, state that South Africa's been engaged in this strained conversation, if you will, on trade relationships with the US. But our position has been to compartmentalize the trade issues from the other issues. Our negotiations have been ongoing, and we've been developing over the period since the announcement by the US on what the reciprocal tariff that South Africa would be facing would be. You would know that the US has imposed an additional tariff as well under Section 232 on the basis that foreign imports would so-called threaten the US national security. Those include automotives and auto components, steel and aluminium, semi-processed copper, pharmaceutical products, among others, and medium and heavy-duty vehicles that since the 1st of November 2025. This obviously has an impact on our local industrial efforts as South Africa seeks to reindustrialize our economy. So those negotiations are ongoing. We are developing a revised offer to send to the US based on an agreed upon text, which we have been negotiating over the past few months. And that situation has been ongoing despite sort of the very public difficulties that we've been facing with the US.
An overview of the current proposal that is being put forward and how that differs to the revised proposals we've previously put forward for Washington.
I must at the outset just unfortunately state that the details of the revised offer are still under secrecy. So we're not able to share too many details on what it entails. What I can share with you, however, is the broad principles upon which we have been negotiating with the US on. And that is to reach an agreement on reciprocal tariffs with specific country commitments between the US and South Africa, and also a revised tariff offer. Of course, you would understand that South Africa belongs to the Southern African Customs Union, SACU, and together we form a common external tariff, which has to be negotiated at a SACU level. So that tariff offer has to be negotiated at a SACU level before it goes into our revised offer to the US. And our objectives have always been clear, and that's been to negotiate an agreement that creates a level of predictability on trade, that reduces the reciprocal tariff that's been imposed by the US, which currently sits at 30%, and enable trade to continue to flow without compromising our own ability to make policies that advance our national interests.
Kamil, you touched on the fact that the DTIC, and at least on behalf of South Africa, has by and large tried to compartmentalize this conversation from perhaps other conversations that are taking place. How are we dealing with the fact that some of these conversations overlap, whether we want them to or not? I bring this up in light of the recent developments out of Washington that Senator John Kennedy is putting forward a proposal that South Africa not be allowed to rejoin AGOA when AGOA is reinstated. Of course, I'm not asking you to comment on whether or not we will be part of that, but how is that affecting the conversations we are currently having with Washington, understanding that even if we are negotiating in good faith, it could end up that we don't achieve the desired outcome?
Well, I think it's important that we remain quite principled in our positioning as a country. And that has always been to protect the South African economy and to ensure that the South African economy comes out, you know, stronger at the end of this negotiation. We don't control what happens in the US, unfortunately. But what we do control is our lobby efforts, and we won't give up on ensuring that the South African US trade relationship is maintained after these negotiations. We still view the US as a key trading partner. And so our efforts in negotiations has always been to ensure that we come out with an outcome that is favorable for South Africa. And that includes using various levers that we can pull within the U.S. Congress, within the U.S. Senate, within, you know, various lobby groups within the U.S. to show that South Africa remains a valuable partner for the United States. Yeah.
Protecting the interests of South Africa, but not alienating the country from global markets. That is the aim and the efforts of the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. We wish them all the best in those efforts, and hopefully we can resolve this matter. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the spokesperson for the Minister of the DTIC, Kamil, for taking a look at the latest revised proposals and conversations taking place between Pretoria and Washington.
We can stay here, stick with what worked before, keep our eye on that one spot, steadfast. Or we can recognize that the only constant is change. At 91, we believe that with change comes opportunity. That's why we have 250 investment professionals in the world's investment hubs actively seeking opportunities for you, wherever in the world they may be. Isn't it time to change how you see investing? Invest offshore with 91. 91. Investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP. You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
A couple of weeks ago, we heard an alarming statistic that the gambling revenues in South Africa had exceeded 1.5 trillion rand for a single financial year. It seems we weren't the only ones listening to that number, because it sparked the interest of, amongst others, South African Revenue Services and National Treasury. National Treasury has put forward a proposal to potentially introduce a 20% tax on gambling revenues. We're going to take a look at this in a bit more detail now with the Deputy Director General for Tax and Financial Sector Policy at National Treasury, Christopher Axelson. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of these developments. Chris, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Interesting time that this proposal has come about. I can imagine it wasn't just sparked by the news of the size of the gambling market, but National Treasury would have been watching this sector for quite some time.
Yes, no, thanks very much, and thanks for having me. No, we have been. This has been on our radar for a while. We've been looking at it, having some conversations with some other institutions as well about what it would mean. We've had a few proposals that were put to us from individuals, from some politicians as well, in terms of looking at this issue. So it's been there. We did a little bit of work, and we've decided to put this proposal through. So it's a discussion paper. It's not a ministerial announcement as yet. It's for us to put it out there, get comments, we can assess, and then hopefully advise the minister before he makes any sort of announcement in the February budget.
Chris, let's take a look at the impact this would then have on the fiscus, but also on the gambling industry. Can you tell us perhaps how things currently stand from a taxation perspective and what these proposed changes could look like if they were to be implemented?
Thanks. At the moment, you know, gambling is already taxed. It's taxed at a provincial level. The gambling entities need to license with their provincial regulators. And then once they are licensed and they provide those activities, they are then taxed on them. There are different tax rates based on the type of gambling that applies. So casinos get a particular tax rate, horse racing gets a particular tax rate, and then you have betting or sports betting that also gets a particular tax. Usually it's between 6% and 9% at the provincial level. The issue here today and for this is online gambling. And online gambling goes across borders. So you can't pinpoint it to a particular province. The other issue with that is there could be this incentive for provinces not to increase their rates, because if they increase their tax rates, then those gambling companies could just shift to a different province and continue to, you know, host those online gambling activities. So from our perspective, this really is a good case for why it needs to be a national tax, so that there's no incentive to compete amongst the provinces. If you put it in nationally, and then we would put it in on top of those provincial gambling taxes, then there's nowhere really for them to go. Obviously, you could have remote online gambling from outside of our borders, and we've got measures that we are going to try and use to stop that activity as well.
Chris, can we take a look at the balance that National Treasury is looking to strike here? You want to be able to benefit from the industry, but you also, I imagine, don't want to discourage the industry to the extent that there is nothing that comes of it. How is Treasury approaching that conversation? And is that balance even more difficult because of the nature of this particular market?
So again, this is only proposed for online gambling. So we haven't made any proposals for, you know, fixed gambling that is actually at a fixed place, such as casinos, and just for online. But we did make a comment in the discussion paper that this isn't actually for revenue. We don't mind the additional revenue. It would definitely help for the expenditure needs that we have. But if it was a case where online gambling went to a very small level because of the tax, we would be okay with that. And we think that there are some problematic social repercussions from excessive online gambling use, which can lead to social problems, can lead to financial stress issues. So we're okay with reducing the amount of online gambling that takes place, which is part of the reason for this tax. Hope that it's an indication that government is worried about this. Whether it can reduce that activity by consumers as much as we'd like, we will still have to see. But we are okay with a reduction in the volumes of online gambling that takes place if we then put this tax in and see what happens.
Chris, would policy be another lever to explore in this case? I'm thinking about the policy and the regulation that comes through for financial service providers and that is governed by the FSCA. They're obviously empowered by legislation that National Treasury is able to set. Would it be another lever to explore in an effort to deter the amount of online gambling that's taking place at the moment?
I think there are quite a few other levers. Some of them aren't in our direct control as Treasury, but as you say, we can set some of the policies. Government is going to have to look at, for example, advertising, or especially, you know, financial education to consumers. The Financial Sector Conduct Authority could do a lot there in terms of making sure that, you know, gambling operators operate in the correct way, as well as educating consumers about the potential dangers of excessive online gambling. So government will have to take a bit of a wider approach. This is only one mechanism, and I think it might be the start of a conversation of what we need to do to try and change the trajectory of online gambling in the country.
Chris, we've heard various comments from various stakeholders. I've spoken to the South African Revenue Services Commissioner as well around the impact that the online gambling market has on tax revenue collections as well. At the moment, we understand that this proposal is out for comment. For those that are out there that want to share their opinions, perhaps share some counter proposals or how to perhaps help navigate this, how would they go about doing that?
So they have up until the 30th of January 2026, so we've given it almost 2 months for comment because we know that it is a December period and most people won't be working. But up until the 30th of January 2026, they can email gamblingtax@treasury.gov.za, and you can also see that on our media statement on our website. And we would welcome any comments from the public, from companies, from obviously the betting companies. Anybody's welcome to comment, and then after that we normally hold a workshop where anybody who's commented will be invited, and then we can discuss these over a virtual workshop.
National Treasury is rethinking the online gambling market, partly in an effort to protect consumers, but also in an effort to better understand and better regulate those services that are rendered to South Africans. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Chris Axelson for those insights. He's the Deputy Director General for Taxation and Financial Policy, for joining us to take a look at the latest proposals by National Treasury to potentially tax online gambling.
We can stay here, stick with what worked before, keep our eye on that one spot, steadfast. Or we can recognize that the only constant is change. At 91, we believe that with change comes opportunity. That's why we have 250 investment professionals in the world's investment hubs actively seeking opportunities for you, wherever in the world they may be. Isn't it time to change how you see investing? Invest offshore with 91. 91. Investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Tiger Brands Limited released their annual results for the year ended 30 September 2025 with a final dividend being declared. Revenues were up almost 3% to just north of 34 billion rand. Other metrics that stood out there: headline earnings per share increased by 15%, basic earnings per share up by 30%. The business reporting a good year across their milling and baking business as well as their other business units. For more on this, I'm joined on the line by the Chief Financial Officer at Tiger Brands, Thushen Govender, to take a look at the numbers and see what we make of them. Thushen, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with an overview of the performance for the year that was. A strong set of numbers from a business that has had to contend with challenging environments and operating across different market segments and different portfolio assets. How do you reflect on that as a business?
Good evening, Jimmy, and thank you for having me on the show. Yes, it has certainly been an exceptional year for Tiger in a tough operating environment, as you call out. And this past year has been, you know, as I said, particularly challenging on numerous fronts. But I think we've managed to make great progress. Great progress against our strategic initiatives, as well as great progress on our operating results. I think you would have seen that our portfolio honing strategy has been well executed. The non-core operations, such as Langeberg and Ashton Fruits, such as the Chilean subsidiary, those have been disposed of, and we're in the process of disposing of our Cameroonian subsidiary. So at the end of the day, the portfolio honing is, you know, on par, and we expect to conclude that in the near future. From an operating results perspective, as you call out, it's been a really impressive year. Revenue growth, volume growth, and that volume growth driving some operating leverage, where we saw gross margin improvement, operating margin improvement, and ultimately EBIT from continuing operations growing 35%. And all of this has resulted in a record dividend to our shareholders. All in all, it was about 8.3 billion rand for the year, ordinary dividend and special dividends. And that's why I say it certainly has been an exceptional year, Jimmy.
So, Jen, I want to take a look at how some of the market factors are influencing the decisions that the business is making. You touched on the fact that from a portfolio perspective, there seems to be quite a bit of pruning, letting go of some assets, looking at some other strategic acquisitions. It's happening in the market. You're not the only retailer doing that. Are market factors driving this, or is this something that is part of the strategy that we've looked at in the past for Tiger Brands? It's just a continuation of that strategy.
Absolutely. I mean, if I look at the socioeconomic conditions and the marketplace that we operate in, our consumers are under pressure. And that's what's driven our whole continuous improvement strategy, so that we can manage our price points better and deliver a more affordable product to our consumers. This is against the backdrop of a very competitive environment. And in particular, when your consumers are under pressure, the competitive intensity increases. And in those sort of environments, Jimmy, as you know, organic growth is difficult to come by. Industries out there or fellow competitor manufacturers look for inorganic growth opportunities. From a Tiger perspective, we've been very clear. We want to hone the portfolio first, exit non-core businesses, and reset the foundation, make sure that that foundation is solid for future growth, and thereafter, over the longer term, consider acquisitive opportunities and inorganic growth. I'm sure you would have seen the announcement with the premier acquisition of Rhodes, subject to regulatory approval. And that's just another example of how businesses are looking for scale and looking for inorganic growth when organic growth is tough to come by.
So, Chen, how does a business the size of Tiger Brands decide on capital allocation in a market, as you said, where growth might not be as easy as it was before, where you're a significant player in the market, and now you're looking at saying perhaps we might have to look beyond the borders of South Africa, if that is even a conversation to be had? How do you decide on capital allocation and strategic portfolio optimization at this point?
We have a very disciplined capital allocation model. We established that about 2 years ago, where we've looked across our entire portfolio and essentially assessed each segment, operating segment, and assessed it against qualitative criteria such as market share, brand equity, as well as quantitative criteria such as return on invested capital, operating margins. And against this backdrop, we then selected the portfolio that was core that we would invest behind and the non-core portfolio that we would dispose of. And Tiger has improved its operating cash flow generation. You would have seen that in our results. We've improved our working capital position. And we're in the fortunate position where we, after we've invested against our capital investment requirements, we had surplus cash, which we are giving back to shareholders, either in the form of special dividends or the share buybacks that we underwent in this past year. And then ultimately, Jimmy, you would have seen we've reduced our ordinary dividend cover from 1.75 to 1.25. With regards to expanding north of our borders, we run that as an export model. We leverage our South African manufacturing base, drive volumes through our facilities, and then export into the balance of the continent. And you would have also seen in my presentation earlier today, I spoke to the key distributor model to expand our presence in neighboring countries. You know, gone are the days where we trade into these markets. We're actually working with strategic distributors to drive understanding of our local consumers, to drive acceptance of our brands, and deepen market penetration. So expansion into our neighboring countries is a very strategic growth vector, and we're confident with our capital allocation model, there's sufficient funds to invest behind this, in particular as in when we require capacity expansion in our facilities.
So Shen, most of the business segments performed well, with revenues increasing in almost all of the segments. I noted there was a slight decline in the home and personal care division from a revenue perspective. I imagine from a business perspective, some of the movements are cyclical. Some of the exposure to the various segments become cyclical. Is this an area of concern for the business at the moment, or is it just part of ordinary course of business?
I think in the year that passed, we've faced some specific challenges in that home and personal care category. The first challenge was during the pest season, and that was the summer in the last year, we faced a supply challenge where we did not have sufficient cans for our aerosol pesticide business, in particular under the Doom brand. And as a consequence, that impacted our results because we weren't able to supply the market during a very crucial period in the year. The other thing to point out, Jimmy, is in that base that you see in the prior year, there's also the well-being, baby well-being contribution, and that is still sitting within continuing operations. So if you back that out, we actually did see some incremental growth. And if you consider the challenge we faced with our pesticide supply into the market, I think it's been a fairly good year for us. Obviously, there's always room for improvement. We're busy with relaunch plans for our Ingram's Camphor Cream. That's a very seasonal business. It's a heritage brand. We want to contemporize that. We want to reduce the dependency on camphor. We want to make sure we offer our consumers an all-year-round skin solution so that we reduce the dependency on the winter sales. So I think it was an acceptable result, but there's huge opportunity for growth within that category.
So, Shen, before I let you go, do you have a preferred segment within the business that you like for any odd reason?
Now, that's a tough question, Jimmy, probably the toughest one you've asked me this evening. You know, I used to manage what we call the old consumer brands biz division back before I was appointed CFO. That's culinary, HPC, snacks and treats and beverages. And I still have a sort of close affinity to that part of the business. But having said that, grains, Moorebake is delivering a great performance. And, you know, being a CFO, when you see that great performance, you immediately fall in love again.
A business that makes any CFO fall in love, a business that is focused on providing all of the best to its customers, that is Tiger Brands Limited, that provided us with an update on their performance over the year that ended 30 September 2025. Thanks so much to the Chief Financial Officer, Tushen Govender, for joining us to review those numbers and get a sense of where the business is headed.
Welcome to Mzansi, where the vibe is always on, but the lights are off. Where we smile through dark times with the hope of a bright future. Where the grass seems greener on the other side, but we choose to go green here. Where Look-See helps improve your home's energy efficiency through quality products, solutions and services. Visit looksee.co.za to learn more about home energy efficiency. Powered by Standard Bank. Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. Renewable energy continues to remain the focus of much of the development that takes place in South Africa, and to that extent, that development requires financing, and the right kind of financing. I'm referring to things like the recent Midvaal private hospital that Standard Bank assisted with 34 million rand in renewable energy financing. We're going to take a look at this and other details around renewable energies with the Executive Head for Energy Infrastructure and Mining at Standard Bank South Africa's Business and Commercial Banking, Dirosh Maharaj. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of these developments. Dirosh, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's perhaps start with an overview of the energy and infrastructure division that you are responsible for and how you're seeing the renewable market. And then we'll get into just some of the projects that you've been busy with.
Jimmy, thanks for having us on the show, and thank you for your listeners for tuning in as well. So the area that I lead is, as you've stated, is energy, infrastructure and mining. And the energy and infrastructure portfolio is indeed a very important and large focus for us. Renewable energy does take the bulk of the focus in that department. On the infrastructure side, water and waste as it pertains to renewables and circular economy is becoming very, very topical. I think the water agenda is a burning agenda that we're giving a lot of focus to. But as far as maturity of the market, all of the tailwinds that are driving this particular environment, renewable energy is still, you know, an absolute advantage and opportunity in many ways for the South African economy and the African continent at large.
So, Dirosh, let's look at projects like the Midvaal private hospital project that Standard Bank was recently involved in. How do projects like these start to become even more important, not just because of the renewable aspect of the project, but because healthcare is an essential service and some of these projects are for essential things that the country does need?
So, Jimmy, that's an excellent question. So when you think about how this project for the Midvaal private hospital plays a role, there's two lenses to it. The first lens is obviously looking at Midvaal as a business. So we know that energy costs are escalating. We know that in some areas and in many areas, actually, there's still an element of grid instability. Now, for a business that operates in any industry, escalating energy costs does put those businesses under strain, and it affects a whole lot of downstream elements to that business. But when you look at hospitals as an operation rely on uninterrupted power to keep patients safe. So when the grid is under pressure, surgeries, the intensive care units and diagnostic equipment, they can't afford delays or downtime. So by funding a system like this for hospital entities, these businesses are able to secure reliable, affordable energy so it can continue delivering life-saving care without disruption.
Dirosh, I remember a couple of months ago having a conversation around 450 billion rand that was put towards sustainable financing and the commitment that Standard Bank made in that respect. I imagine projects like these are geared towards that, but how else do we kind of use that carve out to make sure that the projects that are dealt with, or the projects that are put forward, actually help us achieve sustainability, but also meet some of the other targets and other needs of the country and the continent?
So, yeah. So, Jimmy, sustainable finance is a very broad and quite a complex topic, right? And renewable energy is a very important sprocket within that system. You know, and it's a big one. It's a significant one. You know, energy is probably one of the major levers in regard to, you know, moving those, you know, moving in the correct direction. Well, as it pertains to, you know, the targets that we've set for ourselves to achieve, that 450 billion rand North Star target that we've set, it guides many of our activities. And once again, I come back to renewable energy as being a key driver in this transition. So for us, it guides us to ensure that it keeps our focus on driving the correct agendas. Projects like this fit into a very, very specific and direct strategy that we have to support small to medium enterprises that are faced with these challenges of grid instability or escalating costs that impact their business operations. So it supports them in many ways from a business resilience perspective, but it also helps them transition into this new world of sustainability, where there's carbon borders emerging and there's a lot more of a lot more sensitivity in the public around how green are the products and services that I'm using. So I think that that limit achieve over the next couple of years is absolutely critical as a North Star guiding us. But then as it comes down to these projects, we have set very specific targets from the large utility scale projects to these smaller projects. And this is by no means a small project in the small to medium enterprise environment, but small as compared to, you know, the utility scale projects. But the impact collectively is great, irrespective of which elements you look at. That's what's key. So having those key drivers feeding up into this goal that we've set has to tie together. And I think in the frameworks that we've built, all of the sustainability agendas are being addressed.
It isn't just about renewable projects. It is about ensuring that we build sustainable infrastructure, sustainable solutions, and that we unlock Africa's true potential. That is the goal of the team at Standard Bank, and that is where their efforts continue to be focused. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Executive Head for Energy, Infrastructure and Mining at Standard Bank South Africa's Business and Commercial Banking, Dirosh Maharaj, for taking us through their latest renewable energy project and how they are financing these all across the continent. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain. And the company's called Mesh Trade to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
SME of the Week is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Start out or scale up with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply. It's SME of the week time. We love this feature. I love this feature particularly because we get to spotlight small businesses doing exceptionally well, showcase those businesses to you, our SAFM community, and hopefully through that help the businesses themselves do a little bit better. This week's SME is a company called Angela Care, and I'm joined on the line by the company's co-founder and CEO, Kogetso Ramatlo, to take a look at the business and get a sense of what it is that they do. Kogetso, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about Angela Care. What is it that you do and how did the business come about?
Thank you for having me. So Angela Care is a skin and hair care company using only organic ingredients and plant-based indigenous ingredients like moringa, turmeric, baobab, marula, avocado, and many more. How did the business come about? Well, my son, so I've got three kids, my second born, when I gave birth to him, he came with a skin that was so... It was so bad. Like the skin condition was more like it looked like a crocodile skin. He had eczema, he had allergy. And they said the highest count of allergies actually count 4. But his count was like 1,000 and something. So there was a condition of, I don't know, I don't even remember the name of the condition. So my daughter was worried because obviously we're in and out of the hospital and so forth. And no amount of prescription could help. Then one day she said, but moringa on my hair, why don't you use it on his skin? Cut the long story short, that gave birth to Angela K, because that healed my son literally within like 2 months or in less than 2 months. And then, yeah, we started the business and we named it Angela K because Angela cared so much about the baby brother. So that's how we started.
Certainly an interesting way to start a business. Kogetso, tell us about what the business looks like today. How have you grown the business? What products do you offer to the market today? And what continues to move Angela Care forward?
So we now have about 31, 32 products. We use obviously only organic ingredients, plant-based indigenous ingredients, as I had said. And we are actually also manufacturing for other companies as well. We've got 7 companies that we're manufacturing for, which is doing contract manufacturing, private labeling. And also we have about more than almost 10 distributors that distribute for us. So we are scaling up. We have represented South Africa in about 7 international countries in the past 3 years. And yeah, we also exporting to countries such as China. We also exporting to soon to export as well to some of the UAE countries. So yeah, that's where we at, and currently have also, you know, built our own home lab and expanded our offices. So that's where we at this point.
Okay, so what are you doing in the home lab?
So, you know what, through experiences, I'm not going to lie to you, through experiences, we want an organic growth, right? We don't want to be like, let's go and work at a warehouse. I mean, I think COVID has also taught us that actually you can work at the comfort of your home as long as, you know, you've got the right space and have made it very conducive for you to work at. So that is where what we're looking at. We've got a big yard and so our house is kind of like separated from the home lab and from the home offices and so forth. So thought that, wait, let's just lease from ourselves. So making great business financial decisions because we've got some bad experiences and like, no, let's just allow an organic growth and make means with what we have.
Got to make smart business decisions sometimes. Kogetso, you touched on the fact that you are now exporting to other countries. How did that come about and how did you get into retail? Take me through that journey and what that taught you.
So Angela, one day, just a quick story. One day we were at, I don't know if I should mention the shop, but one of the retail shops. And she was like, and I said to her, well, baby, your products are going to be in the store. And she said, but no, mommy, I want my products to be in California. And I did not understand how she even knew California and so forth, but that actually planted a seed in me that, you know what, we can actually go global, actually. I just started manifesting it. I'm very big, spiritually, I'm a big manifester. I'm a person that believes in prayer and working hard as well. So we would manifest and that, you know what, one day we will go to these countries and represent South Africa. I think a year from then, when we were at an exhibition, we got scouted by sort of the motherboard of cosmetics who then wanted, you know, to take us in and said that, you know, we could go to countries and so forth, obviously if we are export ready and so forth. And I remember when we went to that exhibition, we just put on a board that we are ready to export, not knowing that, you know, someone's going to come and spot us and love our products and so forth. And then we started going to countries whereby, you know, they started liking our products and so forth. And that is how we actually started, right? And yeah, in terms of retails, we're not in the big retails. We are in pharmacies. Just because we've done our research, we don't want to be in big retail stores. Not now, but we actually thought that, you know what, rather let's take the route of having distributors than being on shelves, competing with so many products and ours not being known, with, you know, not a big marketing budget. So rather, let's get into the distribution model. And it's working very nicely for us. And yeah, we just wanted to export and get those, you know, dollars and euros.
Always got to go after the important things there from a business perspective. Kwaketso, how do people get in touch with a business? Where can people find Angela Care products if they're looking to try the products? And how can they get hold of you if they're looking to partner and work with you?
So we are in a few selected Galapeng pharmacies. We are in Royer's Girl Pharmacy, which is based in Centurion. We are also online. We are also on Macro Online, on e-commerce on Macro Online. But yeah, if anyone is interested in either starting their own business using, you know, private labeling or contract manufacturing or wanting to be our distributor, they can call this number 012-655-0541. Follow us on our page, Instagram. We are Angela_BeautyHealthandHygiene. Angela_BeautyHealthandHygiene. I think, yeah.
So, Kwaketso, what's next for the business? What are you currently working on?
So right now, okay, I'm at my scale up, like I'm scaling up. So I am working obviously on the expansion of the lab and so forth. So we 90% done. But yeah, 90% done. Oh, and I'm also in a competition called Engine the Making of, which is sponsored by Engine, and it's ran by Race Cop. I am currently the top two now, so it's a competition of entrepreneurs. It starts off as being 10, and then each and every day, you know, there is someone that gets voted off, and we win 100,000 per day. So yeah, so now I'm on the top two. I made it to the top two, and the finale is going to be playing tomorrow. So hopefully, I make it through. So yeah, that's exciting.
Angela Care, a business born out of a sister's love for her brother, a thriving South African business, and a business we wish all of the very best to. Thank you so much, Kwaketso, for the time and for the insights. We wish you and your business all of the very best success going forward. Kwaketso Ramatlo, the co-founder and CEO of Angela Care, joining us to take a look at her small business. Inspired by the SME of the week? Start your own business or scale up and save up to 50% on fees with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, 46669. T's and C's apply.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And that's the show for today, folks. That's the show for the week, because tomorrow we have the SAFM annual lecture that will be taking place. There'll be a build-up to that lecture from 6 to 7 p.m., which means we, unfortunately, will not provide a market update tomorrow, but we will keep an eye on the markets and see what is to unfold. It seems as though markets at the moment are preparing to close out the month of November in very, very positive territory. The Rand as well, showing signs of not letting up. It's at 17 rand and 9 cents at the moment, so we might even break or retest that 17 rand level as we go into the end of the year, but we'll keep an eye on that and we'll report back on that if anything does develop from there. For now, it is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Hose is standing by, of course, to bring you the latest round of evening news from the SAFM team side, and following that will be Michael Abramson with the latest in top sport. From my side, good night.